What's up, everybody? This is Rome, your host from Sources from the Sofa. Today's episode, we're going to do a full recap of the NFL wildcard weekend. The last two teams that I got, they're out. Steelers are gone. They didn't really show up. And Texas, they're out as well. They were so close to tying it up. So close to possibly winning it. Self-inflicted wounds. But Ohio State, man, they are phenomenal. They look great. They're peaking at the right time. And I feel like their loss to my Michigan is what ignited the whole thing. But we talk about college football, semifinal games, and we even talk a little NFL coaching rumors. Get the update from Chicago Bears, Raiders. We have a hire already, but the coaching circle is kind of moving a little slow this year. Rule changes. A lot of the candidates are still in the playoffs. And if you're a coach and you make it to the playoffs, there's like delayed dates on when you could do Zoom interviews before you, when you could do in-person interviews. So Vrabel, for instance, he was with the Browns. He was smart. He had his contract and a week before the end of the season. So he was able to meet in person a week or two before everybody else. He got a pick of the litter. Is that the right phrase? Pick of the litter? Either way, he's obviously now with the Pats. Don't go anywhere. Sources on the Sofa. NFL wildcard weekend is in the books. And a lot of games were flat out ugly. The only thing that was really competitive, you can say, is Commanders Bucks. Mayfield, he can't do no harm, man. This guy's a really great guy. Really supported his teammates. Had a lot of good things to say. Tough loss. But hats off to the Commanders. Everything else, though, Chargers no-showed. Texans took care of business. That was a good call by me. I don't know how I did it. Must have been high on something or drinking the sauce. Ravens, a lot of talk on Tomlin. Is it time to go? Six straight playoff losses. They haven't won anything in 8 years. Is it six straight playoff losses?
Yeah.
Five-game losing streak to end the 2024 campaign. Straight up disappointing. They look like they had no heart. They didn't show up at all. I'm disgusted. It's the Tomlin talk again. Bills. They did what the Bills do. They looked really nice. They took care of the Broncos. Broncos had no chance up in Buffalo. Eagles were flying high. Took care of Aaron's Packers. He has that solemn, stoic look on his face right now. So I know he's feeling the loss. But he did call the win. You're not feeling it?
No, I said the Eagles would win.
No emotion?
I had the Eagles in the power rankings ahead of the Packers for the last 8 weeks. So, not a shame. I believe when we went off the air last time, I said the Eagles would be in the Super Bowl. So,
yeah,
I'll stand by that.
Wait, did we do that off the air or on the air?
I don't remember. Oh, it's on the air. I did listen to the segment. Yeah,
I
went back. Yeah. Proofreading my work, if you know what I mean.
I like it.
Can't trust Rome to document what our picks are. We got to go back and just listen to ourselves, you know?
I got all my notes right here.
Yeah.
Rome's notes is we got like half of it right. And he's like, what did I write here? Did I even
like
take notes on this?
Like Rome sent a screenshot and said like 27, 24, but no initials or who said anything. It's like, wait, like.
No, there's an initial on the left-hand side.
But it's not in the screenshot photo.
Oh.
So it's like, let me just go put AT right there and I'll just say, yeah.
I had to go back and listen, just clip out the audio of like, you know, my Nostradamus pick of the week, man, 27-24 Notre Dame. You know, I just told y'all.
It was a good one. Really good one. And then Rams just have the Vikings number. I don't know how else to put it. I think Vikings showed some heart in the second half, kind of, and pieces, if you could say. But Rams just look, their defense, they had like seven guys on every tackle.
Some teams just have some other teams' numbers this year. Obviously, the Vikings are owned by the Rams and the Lions, and the Packers owned by the Eagles and the Lions at the end of the day.
Yeah. So I don't know which way you want to break down the games, guys, or if you just want to talk about wildcard weekend in totality, your views of all the games, the blowouts or the ugliness of it. There's a lot of memes on socials and on the internet of how terrible the playoff committee was for the NFL. I thought that was like a really good joke going around. And there's definitely a lot of Tomlin memes.
the Bengals, you know, they had a tougher strength of schedule. They just didn't respect the Bengals should have been in the playoff, you know?
If there was a playoff committee, yeah, the Bengals definitely deserved it. They would have been like a big loss on the on a proposed playoff committee for sure. Yeah, thoughts, Jason?
Yeah, you already talked about it. None overly competitive games besides the Commanders-Bucks game, which was really the highlight of Sunday night. Eagles-Packers, like, felt like it was a blowout, but then, you know, you go into halftime and it's only 10-0, and Eagles kind of left the Packers around a little bit, but even then, it never felt particularly close. Bills, I mean, early in that game, I think it was going when the Broncos went down the field on that opening drive.
Yeah, they scored the first one, right?
Scored the first touchdown, you know, held the Bills to a field goal in the first quarter. Even going into the half, you know, it's only a 10-7 game. Broncos feel like they're making it, but, you know, then Josh Allen just kind of takes over in the second half, and Bo Nix just really couldn't, you know, find that magic. And the broadcast talked a ton in that game about Buffalo being an extremely difficult place to play. They listed off, like, the quarterbacks that had won on the road in Buffalo, and I don't know, was it, like, Mahomes and Brady and, like, Elway or something like that?
I think it was just Mahomes and Burrow are the only quarterbacks ever to win.
Okay.
Yeah.
Recently?
Yeah.
Maybe ever. Because I don't know. Outside of the Jim Kelly era, I don't think Buffalo was ever in the playoffs.
You're right, actually. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, but a difficult place to play. And, you know, I think Bo Nix had a fantastic rookie season. I know Aaron, you know, called that at the beginning where it's at. I think the sky will be up for him. But, you know, the Broncos potentially overachieved in this first year. I don't think there's any, you know, negative you can really cast on their season. You get a rookie quarterback, you make a good run in a pretty competitive division that sent three teams to the playoffs, and you know, you got to take the road, one of the harder roads going across country to upstate New York. We talked about on the last pod, I think it was one of 3 days that it wasn't going to snow was game day, but you know, it has that Buffalo frigid conditions, which is, you know, a little bit different than the cold in Mile High. But Josh Allen, man, I mean, just
he was really efficient, man. 20 for 26, 272, two touchdowns. Well, they had four field goals as well. Bass was clutch.
Yeah, I just go into it. I mean, they got James Cook really going too, and I know we'll go into more, like, you know, matchup stuff versus the Ravens, but like you get James Cook really going. Josh Allen's able to be an extra dual threat with the ball. He had like 46 yards rushing at the same time too. So just a lot to like for Buffalo. It's kind of sad they're going to be going into like a matchup of like two quarterbacks that the expectations are win a Super Bowl at this point between Lamar and Josh Allen, and pretty much the 1 and 2 in the MVP. So we're getting a good, we're getting a treat in this next round for probably what many consider probably the two best teams in the AFC, if you ask Rome, because you don't want to give the Chiefs their due. But I mean, these are two teams that are looking to make that next step. They keep knocking on the door to this Kansas City team. Buffalo answered early, undefeated at home so far this season. That continues, you know, a dominant win that sets them up nice for the next round.
Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, these playoffs, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, the Broncos getting in, the Chargers getting in, Vikings. These are all three teams that overachieved regular season-wise and did not show up in the playoffs, all got blown out. Texans, that was a big win. Rome, you said they got some momentum going in with that last win against Tennessee.
I feel like they really needed that, and that really was...
We asked each other, you know, Jason had brought this up, like, what's wrong with the Texans? They haven't looked good. Well, they showed up when they needed to at the biggest stage, because that's the best the Texans have looked all year.
All year.
And can they carry that momentum going forward into Kansas City? We'll find out. They just got beat pretty bad there 3 weeks ago, but that should be a good game once we break that down. Steelers look like the Steelers of the last month. This is, what, the second time in the last 3 years that Tomlin and his team has stumbled going into the playoffs, where they lose like 6 in a row, like 3-4 years ago, and now 5 in this season. They don't really have a quarterback they feel confident in. Pickens is, you know, he's running his mouth over there. They did not pick up Najee Harris's contract, so he's a free agent.
Really?
So there's a lot going on in Pittsburgh. Will Tomlin be there? Will he not? We just saw earlier today, Dallas finally decided to cut ties with Mike McCarthy.
surprising. We'll definitely talk about coaching circle stuff later on.
Considering that his first interview is going to be with Jason Bears, he's already shaking his head.
Dude,
over there. But we'll
dominoes.
Get into that.
Yeah, for sure.
But a dominant showing by Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. We wouldn't expect otherwise. And then Buffalo, Jason said it. Broncos came out first drive right off the bat, touchdown. I put that loss on Sean Bate, and he called a terrible game. Never gave Bo Nix a real chance to keep that team in the game. Maybe he just didn't feel confident in him. Maybe he thought his defense could come through. But you've got to outplay Josh Allen at the quarterback position to beat him. So that showdown coming up with Baltimore is going to be great this upcoming weekend. NFC side, Rams, D-line just dominated. Sam Darnold sacked it 9 times. That ties a playoff wild card record.
Really?
Yeah. Baker, tough loss, man. That fumble down there at their own end of the end zone there led to a touchdown that got the momentum back for the Commanders. Eventually, they got the game-winning field goal. A doink that went in. Obviously, the Broncos' doink didn't go in to tie that game at the half.
Unbelievable.
Philly, you guys said it. I mean, never seemed like they were not going to win that game, even though it was like a one-plus score game. They were in control throughout. Packers, just too many injuries. I think they lost 5 starters in that game, 2 wide receivers, a couple offensive linemen. They never had a chance. They just never did.
Yeah, I'll go back. I want to go back to the Ravens-Steelers game
too.
A little bit here. Okay. Go ahead. It's your team, Rome. Go ahead.
No, I already said my team looked like shit, right? I'm disappointed. I was ranting on the Steelers on X, and I was not happy about it. Derrick Henry looked great, man. 180-plus with 2 touchdowns, I believe. Rushing. Lamar added another 80 yards. We couldn't stop the run for shit. Watt has not looked like a shell of himself, for 6-7 games now, ever since he was out after a few weeks. I don't know what I'm at a loss of words.
Yeah, for Derrick Henry, like, man, in a entire league full of genetic freak athletes, just there is something about that guy that is just different.
I love watching him play.
For how big he is, and like you get him in the open field and he's got a step, and at what is he, 30, 31 years old? Right now, when you think about a back that's that big and plays this bruising style, and when he's in Tennessee, he's attacking defenders, and that the fact that at this point his body hasn't broken down, when he still has that extra step to get away and just take off from people, like it is a different element to that Baltimore offense that Lamar's never had before, and Lamar didn't need to do too much because the threat is always there. For your Steelers, Rome, like, look at the rushing stats. Like in this game, compared to when they had Fields in the lineup early in the year. And we talked about this, I'm pretty sure, a week or 2 weeks ago going into this. Najee Harris had 6 carries. Jaylen Warren had 2 carries. And so we fall in love with Russell Wilson because, getting into those, what is it, the 5th or 6th game, whatever it's when he started, and he started really airing out the deep ball and stuff like that. And this is kind of a retread take right now, but you get into the playoffs into a tight divisional game and you don't even put it on the ground for your running backs. You're still trying to do all this stuff with Russell Wilson. It just was not when this team won 10 games, the secret was, hey, we have this running game that is going to set up the pass. And whether it's, hey, they can't move the ball with the offensive line and they have to resort to that, and that's the issue, or we're just not believing it because something drastically has changed with the Steelers offensively. Yeah. And you mentioned with the defensively, they just aren't as sharp as they were early in the season.
Not as sharp. And Jason, if you ever want like any support for your dumb offensive, movement for your Chicago Bears, this is it. Because even with the new offensive coordinator, we look like shit. We totally went away from like a more imaginative, more open playbook. They ran the ball more with Fields. You kind of opened that up. Yeah. Wilson was doing well for a small stretch when Pickens wasn't picking fights with other people. It's just the play calling just went down the drain really fast. And just feels like another lost season. A lot of good players, especially on defense. A lot of star players. Just not the right game plan.
Well, I think the play calling, but I think the execution was a big thing. I mean, were winning, Russell Wilson wasn't turning the ball over. Then he started turning the ball over, so then they went away from him and started running. I mean, Jason, so I'm looking at the guys' carries right now, 6, 3, and 2 between Wilson, Warren, and Harris. But they got down 21-0, like, right off the bat.
That was fast.
And now you're going against the number one run defense. You're down 21-0, so how do you get back in the game big plays? How do you get big plays? You got to throw the ball. Unfortunately, you're now going against a Ravens defense that over the last 6 weeks, it's number one pass defense now. So right now, if you're looking at teams that got it rolling offensively and defensively, it's the Ravens. There could be a great showdown with the Bills coming up. But Wilson still threw for 270 yards and 2 touchdowns. Made the game somewhat interesting once he got it within 2 scores. But that was another game where, like, it was 28-14, but it felt like the Ravens won by 4 touchdowns. So, I mean, they need to go out and get a quarterback. And whether or not they want to bring back Russell Wilson on a, you know, kind of typical Sam Darnold 1 year, $10 million deal.
He's going to want more than that, right?
Does he? I mean, he's still getting paid by the Broncos or whatever. I mean, he's made a ton of money. So, I don't know. I mean, Jason brought it up. I agreed with it. Aaron Rodgers is out there. I mean, to me, the discussion, I mean, Sam Darnold just lost himself a lot of money with these last 2 games. He's not the answer. Well, they were good opponents.
You brought up Tomlin's job status, and while I really love Tomlin as a coach,
so do I.
I know, and so I think it is hard to part with a coach like that has instilled such an identity to the Steelers and how it ties into the, you know, working class structure of Pittsburgh and, you know, the type of guys they bring in there. I don't want to give him a slide on this, but when you think post Roethlisberger, what has been the quarterback plan in Pittsburgh? There just hasn't been one. And you look at the same thing with the Colts when it was post Andrew Luck. It's like, we're gonna sign a guy, or we'll have a deep draft pick here and there. And like, the offense for the most part has had no identity, you know, post that Roethlisberger era, where like, quarterback means so much. And I can say this as a Bears fan, and you go against Aaron's Packers, where you always have the quarterback and everything else you can fill around that roster. The Steelers know we have the defense. They invest in the defense and in the trenches and the offensive line and what they can do in the running game. But like, you don't have a plan for the quarterback. I don't know what you're setting up for your head coach to do, especially when you're a division where you have, what, 2 of the 4 best quarterbacks in the league? 2 of the 3 best quarterbacks in the league?
It's a tough time to be in that division.
Right. So, you know, what are you doing to compete? If they go with Rodgers, like, that may be Tomlin's last stand type thing. It's like, hey, this is the guy I'm bringing in. This is kind of like the end of it. What's the succession plan behind it? Because if you go into the draft, like, it's been talked about, this isn't the best draft for quarterbacks. So bringing in, you know, Shador or Cam Ward or somebody like that, like, that's not going to be the answer next year. And I think, like you said, Rome, a missed opportunity with some of the pieces they got on this roster that aren't getting any younger, you know, to be in a quote unquote championship window.
We're just stuck in purgatory because now we're just winning 9-10 games every year, not shitty enough to get a higher draft pick and not bad enough. You know, it's just a tough place to be.
It's true. But in the NFL, it's not like the NBA.
I
saw that take on Twitter. Someone said, I think they're probably from Pittsburgh, like, oh, we're in NFL purgatory because we're just like
an
8-8 team. Yeah, and it's like, you think about it, it's like, okay, but it's not like the NBA where, hey, you're locked into these, like, you know, like the Bulls. They got Lonzo Ball's contract.
Forever, 8 to 10 seed.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, we're going to be the 8 to 10 seed. We're never going to get bad enough to get, like, but in basketball, it's, hey, 1 to 2 players makes a difference. You want to be as bad as potentially possible to get, like, these, you know, once-in-a-generation players or whatever that you get in the first couple picks of a draft. NFL is just so deep, you can make some depth plays, and sometimes it's not even great to have top draft picks because of, you know, the wage scale and stuff like that. A lot of people tell you it's better to have a bunch of second and third round picks because the difference between the 15th player in the draft to the 40th player in the draft may be minute as far as, you know, talent and production, and it has a big sliding scale. So I don't know if that's true, but at the same time, like, the quarterback, I think, just means a ton as far as what your vision's going to be. And if you're just going to keep doing retreads and different stuff there in Pittsburgh, you're just going to wind up with a team that's going to be around 500. And I think if you look at, I mentioned the Colts. You look at the Steelers. Hey, there's all these good pieces around it, but every year I'm just bringing some different quarterback to go in, and it's good enough to get me to, you know, 9 wins, maybe the postseason, but it's not a Super Bowl winning team.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, the Steelers need a quarterback. I mean, Jason, you said it in Rome. I think they spend the most money of any team in the NFL on defense, and their defense is always a top 10 unit. Their special teams is really good. They got arguably the best kicker in the league. Their offensive line is solid. They've got good playmakers on the outside of Austin Pickens and the tight end. 2 running backs. Yep. What are they missing? A quarterback, maybe another playmaker. Is Rodgers probably the answer at 41? Likely no. But is he an upgrade over what they got currently now? I would say it's worth a try. Rodgers will come in cheap. I mean, do they want to wait? You know, are they going to want to make a splash and move up in the draft and get one of these guys that are the quarterback, whether it's Ward or Sanders? I don't know. I don't think so. Teams are going to hold a lot over them. You know, I just mentioned, you know, we've talked a lot about Sam Darnold. These last couple games would determine where he gets placed.
I was actually thinking about that. I was trying to picture him in a Steelers.
If I'm the Vikings, I let him walk. I mean, you got Daniel Jones. I would keep Daniel Jones and J.J. McCarthy and go from there. I mean, you got a first-round exit and 14 wins. Your season basically means nothing now. So the Steelers, I mean, this is one thing why I picked against Tomlin and them to finish above 500. I didn't believe that they could do it, but Tomlin somehow every year pulls a rabbit out of his ass and does it.
They were in the top in my power rankings for a few weeks. Man. I mean, they were
9-3 and cruising, and then Pickens got hurt with that hamstring, and the offense like never regrouped from there, and the defense just got fatigued and tired. And this kind of seems like a common theme with the Steelers. While other teams are building momentum towards the playoffs, the Steelers are actually going in the opposite direction. And they've lost 6 straight playoff games. In all 6 of those playoff games, they've been down by a minimum 21 points or more in all 6 of those losses. So they have not shown up towards the end of the year and not shown up in the playoffs. If this was anybody outside of Tomlin and a Super Bowl winning coach, he probably would already be canned. But, you know, I'm a Tomlin guy. Does he want to stay there? We'll see.
It's like dating dating somebody. I don't know where I'm going with this. The Steelers, you know, it's perfect in the beginning, and then all of a sudden, the Troy Danny shows up, and you're like, oh, man, this person's batshit crazy.
Oh, well, I will say, I don't know about your analogy in this point, but the Steelers have – it's only long-term relationships with the Steelers. You've had 3 coaches. Is it, what, in your franchise history?
That's great, yeah.
So – It's a model of consistency, unlike other clown show franchises like the Bears, that, you know, just hire a new coach every 3 to 4 years and a new GM every like 5 to 6 years. So there's a level of stability there. But I mean, even for, you know, Bill Cowher, there was a time he won the Super Bowl and kind of like found his way out there a little more. Like there's a time that potentially it goes there and it may be time to move on. I don't know if that's it with Tomlin. I still think he's maintained winning, you know, at least they get to 500 or they're above. But yeah, like the next one, the dynamic, maybe Rome, you know, this, like what power does he hold when it comes to some of this personnel stuff? If he tells them I need Rodgers, are they listening to him? I don't know.
That's a great question, Jason. I don't know. No clue. Biggest surprise from this weekend, takeaway from wildcard weekend. Was it just the way the Texans beat up on the Chargers? Are you surprised the way Eagles manhandled the Pack? Are you surprised the Commanders come out again against the Buccaneers? That was a great game.
Great game, but I'll start with the beginning when you said the Texans-Chargers, because we already talked about with the Texans really finding that spark in the last game and kind of starting, but the Chargers really, you know, they've been competitive in every game. You know, they weren't supposed to be an 11-win team where they're at under Jim Harbaugh, but he was finding a way to get there, and it was very just uncharacterized, not what this team had done the entire year. Obviously, the turnovers from Herbert in the game.
Or interceptions.
Made the big delta, but, you know, for the most part, this team's been super competitive in every game, and like, hey, they're grinding out the clock. They're keeping it close. It's about, you know, field position and possessions, and in this one, you know, when your quarterback is 14 for 32 and throwing four interceptions, like, man, it just wasn't what you saw from a Jim Harbaugh coach team the entire year.
It looked like a game at first. You know, they had Dicker the kicker. Aaron, you talked about them and before the week in your prediction. You said he's going to come through. He came through initially, I think, like in the first quarter. And then the weapons, the reason why we liked the Texans so much before the season started is because they got Joe Mixon, Nico Collins. I think Jason was really big on Collins early in the year, and they looked really great. They looked like the team that, you know, we wanted to look like early in the year, but they took care of business. But four interceptions, like everything kind of like oversailed. He kind of looked like Darnold almost against the Lions, like just the ball just kind of carried away.
I think if you look at the interceptions from Herbert, I only put two of them really on him. I think
McConkey
the Texans
killed it. He was really good.
Yeah, Ladd McConkey's good. The Chargers, Jason hit it, said it best.
Truly.
They overachieved.
Yeah, for
I mean,
sure.
They won 11 games. And if you would have told me before the season started, hey, the Chargers are going to make the playoffs, they're going to play on the road at the Texans, we all would have said the Texans are going to beat them. Texans have a better roster. They have a better team. That showed up on Saturday. Texans at home are really good. You know, I was looking back at their numbers against quarterbacks this year. Herbert, 4 picks. Goff, 5 picks in one game against these guys.
That's
already.
Right.
Josh Allen had his worst game of the year on the road at Houston. Texans are a good football team. So, you know, there's a reason why I picked them to get to the Super Bowl before we even started the season.
Yeah.
They have the weapons. Obviously, losing Diggs and Tank Dill is going to hurt them.
For sure.
Whether or not they can get by the Chiefs and get, you know, to the AFC Championship game or Super Bowl, we'll see. But give them credit, the Texans. But for me, the biggest surprise was just the Commanders, the poise. Jaden Daniels, this team looked confident. They looked like they'd been there.
Like they belong.
They belong, Rome. They weren't fazed by the moment. Every time they faced a problem or issue, they stepped up to the challenge. I was really impressed with the Commanders. Looking forward to a fantastic, fun game against the Lions. That should be a shootout in Detroit coming up.
I like the Commanders all year. You know, I've been really happy watching them play. It's been a nice revelation. But, Jason, I kind of get it.
For what?
Just seeing them pull out a victory like that, you know? I just kind of think about that Bears game. I think that was like the first. I think it was like the first of like many, you know, last minute game win. Did they win like their last few games as well in the season as well? Same fashion, just the poise.
There's a little bit of. I don't know, team of destiny is the wrong word, but like there's things within these games that have just gone their way the entire year that, like, you know, the ball has bounced a certain way. Obviously, they've had, you know, Jaden's been great. Terry McLaurin, man, they had that one throw where it was just like over his head and just like just puts the hands up and straight
beautiful.
There and looks it in.
Basket.
In a league of elite receivers, I don't even know if there's like 10 guys in the league that can make that catch the way that was done. You got guys turn their head left and right. Like, it was like a perfect form. Like, that's professional, you know, receiver stuff right there, the way he caught that ball.
Yeah, he's underrated. I mean, yeah, you guys said it. I mean, every bounce of the ball has gone the Commanders' way this season, except for maybe one game was that game against Dallas, in which was like a fluke game where they were at home and they tied it up. They missed the extra point. Then the onside kick gets returned for a touchdown. You remember that one by Dallas. That was a wild, crazy game. I think another quarterback that actually looked pretty good, and I'll see where he goes in free agency, is Mariota with Washington. He's played limited role this year, but every time he's come in, he's looked pretty good. So I think he's another quarterback that maybe somebody gives him another chance to be a starting quarterback in this league.
I don't know. That's a pretty bold take there.
I mean, I don't agree with Aaron on that, but that's got Steelers written all over it.
No, that's why I brought it up, man.
I'm good, dude. We are good on the Mariota. I think he looked good for one game, and then the next game when he was in for Daniels.
I thought he looked good against Dallas week 18, and he looked good finishing Carolina off. Not much of an opponent in sample size, but
he might
be someone worth getting another chance.
Not the Steelers.
On the cheap.
I'll be rooting for him, just not the Steelers. Any other comments? Let's just take a quick preview then into the divisional round. Texans at the Chiefs. Commanders at Lions, Rams at Eagles, Ravens at Bills. The way things stand, how you guys feeling about these matchups?
Main event of the week is obviously that Ravens-Bills game. I think that's just, that could be an AFC championship game.
Yeah.
You know, in any other year, we're deciding between these two guys who's going to the Super Bowl. It sucks. One of them's going to have to be out in the divisional round. But, I mean, that's the one I'm looking forward to the most. Aaron talked a little bit about where the Ravens have been, you know, offensively. Josh Allen, he's had his own stuff. It's basically a showdown of the 1-2 in the MVP voting. You know, it's going to be a special matchup. As much as Derrick Henry, and we talked about him and, you know, the element he has given Lamar, James Cook, you know, I've been talking about him all year. His performance this week, I think that'll be the key in the game, is how much James Cook can really, you know, be productive, draw attention, allow Josh Allen to do some stuff in the game. We'll talk about it more. I think that's the game I'm looking forward to the most.
I think they're all great matchups. I imagine if Texans play like the way they did this past week, they had definitely have a chance to take out KC and make Aaron's, you know, call become reality of not winning a game. Bills, Ravens for sure is going to be a slugfest. You got to imagine the Lions, Commanders going to be a shootout. Depends on what version of the Detroit defense shows up, I guess. I know they've been getting pieces back and hell of a game plan at the end of the year. And then Rams, Eagles, kind of intriguing. Just early on, I think Eagles just take care of business like in a blowout, but Rams, they're just sneaky, sneaky good. Yeah. All year round, they've been surprising us.
We have the heavyweight fight, Ravens, Bills. That's the game everyone's going to be keeping an eye on. You know, in most years, this is the AFC championship, or it feels like an AFC championship.
Oh,
game,
for
right?
Sure.
I'm curious to see how the Chiefs look. They haven't played their starters really in 3 weeks. They haven't played since Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And who they beat in. So they beat on Christmas Day. Your Steelers, Rome.
Yeah.
That's not saying a lot now.
I don't remember that game.
The Texans, can they go in there? Joe Mixon said it best. They were embarrassed after Baltimore beat them, 31-2?
Wow. Whose dogs are those?
My dog does not like Aaron Steak right now.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know. He's not a big fan of the Texans, I guess. He must be a Charger dog in the background. Not a Bears fan. But, yeah, I mean, for the Texans, will the Chiefs look rusty? Or will they be rested? Like, this game could go two ways. Like, I think the Chiefs could come out, maybe blow them out. Or they look rusted and have to rally back like they've been doing all year and find a way to win a 2-3-4-point game.
Rusty and rested. I feel like that's like a T-shirt. That's a good quote, Aaron. Rusty and rested. I like that.
You know, we saw in the college football playoff, every team that got a bye was off 3 weeks, did not perform well out the gate. Came out a little flat. Came out not as sharp. We'll see with the Chiefs how they look. Eagles, Rome, I tend to agree with you. I just think that Eagles defensive line, offensive line is going to be too much for the Rams. Short week. They got to travel all the way back to Philadelphia. That's a tough task against a Philly team. And Commanders, you know, Detroit defensively, they like to play a lot of man-to-man. That's usually not a good sign against a quarterback that likes to scramble like Jaden Daniels. That usually means you don't have eyes on him. He could have 100 yards rushing. That's a prop bet. I'll be looking to see what his total yards rushing are for the game. I like the over as long as it's below 60 or something. I think he'll have a big game on the ground. Should be a shootout, too. I'm not a big believer in Washington's defense. Detroit will score points. Feels like a 35-30 type ball game. But early, Lions favored by 10, so that's a lot of points.
Let's do a quick exercise before we end this segment, and then we'll take a break and go into college football. But what do you guys think the over-under is for Texans-Chiefs?
I haven't looked. Do you want me to just give you a guess?
Yeah, let's just guess and try to guess the spread.
I already know what the spread is in that game.
Do you guys all know the spread?
I don't know the over-under in that game. I'm going to say it's probably between 43 and 45.
Yeah, I was going to go around the same. I was going to say 42.
It opened at 41, 41 and a half. Do you already know the spreads for all these games, Jason?
The only one I saw, like the Detroit one, was like 8.5, 9 the last
really?
Time I saw it.
Yes, 9.5 now. I'm guessing the over-under's probably 53.5 to 55. It's going to be a lot, I'm guessing.
55.5.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
It'd be a lot.
Rams, Eagles.
I saw spread of 6, over-under. Maybe 44, 46.
What do you think, Jason?
I was going to say 45.
Yeah, it was close. 43.5.
Okay.
Ravens, Bills.
Over, under. I think Ravens are favored by 1. I think the over, under, I'm going to say
50.
I'll say 48.
Jason won that one. 51.5.
It's a high one for that game.
Yeah.
That one I might be feeling the under. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be cold outside, so.
Oh, it's in Buffalo, dude. That's awesome. That's so awesome. Sunday afternoon. All right. Any last comments? We're good. Let's take a quick break and come back. College football semifinal recap. Time for some college football. One game left. Ohio State against Notre Dame for the Natty on Monday, January 20th. Jason's got to be really happy.
Happy and nervous.
Happy and nervous. Of course. We saw that quote of you early in the year, how you're never happy with your teams. It's what's nerve-wracking. Let's start with the Notre Dame game, though, because that was a hell of a game. They both were the hell of a games. Jason correctly called the final score, 27-24. Penn State had every opportunity to win that game, and I feel like they kind of shot themselves in the foot with some really stupid, costly mistakes. But let's go over it really quickly. Penn State gets off to a quick start, 3-0 with a field goal, just 8 seconds into the second quarter, and that's kind of when everything kind of started. The first quarter was kind of like a feel it out, kind of like a boxing match, couple rounds. They're just swinging at each other. And then Penn State gets they go up 10-0. Kind of feels like all the momentum's on their side, but Notre Dame luckily got a field goal before the half. They're down 10-3, but that field goal really played pretty pivotal at the end of the game. Second half, Notre Dame came out on fire. They had a couple long 10-yard runs. Leonard to Williams with a nice double move for 20-plus yards. That kind of like really kind of took the sails out of Penn State for a little bit. Then Riley Leonard with a rushing touchdown. And they tied it up 10-10, 10 minutes to go in the third quarter. So really quick on the next run. They had a 72-yard 10-play drive that just ate up a lot of clock. Jeremiah Love with the rushing touchdown. They're up 17-10, Notre Dame. 17 unanswered points is what we're looking at. And we're barely into the fourth quarter, a minute into the fourth quarter. Penn State responds with 2 back-to-back scores on their own to go up 24-17. They had a big drive and a big run by Singleton. And then I think we had like a Leonard interception in between that. He got hurt, went out of the game, came back in. That was a little scary. Was that like in the half, right? That was in the first half?
That was in the first half, yeah.
Yeah. And then Singleton had another touchdown from the 9-yard line, 24-27 with 8 minutes to go. All these games in the fourth quarter were just like highly intense. And I really loved it. Notre Dame responds. A 54-yard strike for a big score. 24 tight up. And then a big sack by Penn State. They just had like, they had like some really nice defensive coverages. And those 52 seconds left to go. But all of a sudden, Notre Dame gets the ball back. They have enough time. They kick a field goal with 7 seconds left, 27-24. And a stat that I found interesting was that Notre Dame was the worst field goal kicking team in the country. That's what they announced in the broadcast, but they came in clutch. That was one of the funnest games I saw in the year, and really happy for Jason's team. Your guys' takeaway from that game, I thought Penn State had every opportunity to kind of break the game open and get a bigger lead. Some costly mistakes, whatever. I thought the defense swarmed Leonard really well. But outside of that, though, Notre Dame fought and really put up a hell of an effort. Freeman, your guy, Jason, hell of a coach. Great post-game interviews. The team really loves him. And then on X, everyone's replaying those clips of Chip Kelly. Not Chip Kelly.
Brian Kelly.
We just get those two names mixed up. Brian Kelly, you know, with this fanfare press conference, going over to LSU to compete for a national championship. 3 years out, and Notre Dame is competing for a natty again. So, Jason, take it away.
Yeah, we talked a lot about Marcus Freeman this year, and yeah, just you through the TV, I think any of us, at least I know when I'm watching, I want to go play with that guy. You know, I want to be on that team, and you know, there's just an environment there and a culture that he has built there that is engaging, and this team wants. You mentioned the team fight. The Jeremiah Love 2-yard run was the example of how this team is going to fight and give it all they got in that effort on that goal line play. Like that touchdown was just that's why I've praised Jeremiah Love all year. He was hurt coming into this game. The broadcast was talking about like, you know, he's wearing the knee brace or like he's not going to be hurdling guys and this and that. I think there was twice in the game he attempted to hurdle people because just from an instinct standpoint, and then he's on this goal line just fighting for every inch to get across.
Oh, he broke like what, 4 or 5 tackles on that. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, it just unbelievable play. There's a highlight of the game, and that puts them up 17-10. At that point, I'm feeling like, man, yeah, you know, we are in the driver's seat. And then yep. You know, Singleton scored the touchdown, tied things up, and then you talked about it was really the where I thought the win was out of the sails of Notre Dame was when Riley Leonard threw the interception, and then they go right back down and Singleton scores. They're up 24-27, and you just didn't feel all night that Notre Dame's offense, it felt like Riley Leonard was kind of playing into, we had 2 interceptions in the game, and I think the last time he threw that many interceptions was the Northern Illinois game. And you're like, you can't turn the ball over like this and still be competitive. But they had a busted coverage or a player, you know, fall down, which led to that long pass that Notre Dame was able to score the tying touchdown to 24-24. And like, it felt something, there was just something there at that point that was kind of good in Notre Dame's way. And then I admire the not playing for the tie, I guess, for James Franklin, but the interception on Notre Dame's end that really set up that field goal, you know, that just, again, Notre Dame wasn't leaving any of the field. They were fighting. You know, that's a hell of a catch if you're a wide receiver, a defensive back, basically making a diving catch and really like turned it around.
That was
great. Aaron and I said in the pregame it was going to be special teams and defense that made a decisive play. That would decide the game. That was the decisive play that was decide the game because Penn State's trying to make it happen and get down the field with less than a minute remaining and. You know, Drew Allard throws just a costly interception on their own side of the field. And it was just an incredible play that sets up Mitch Jeter for that field goal. So, you know, as a Notre Dame fan, yeah, I'm sweating the entire time. Penn State felt like they had a lot of control of the game. Notre Dame fought back, then played themselves out of the game. But that this is where the fight's at. And it was the kind of that heavyweight bruising matchup that we expected it to be. It wasn't going to be the cleanest game. You know, it was going to be a lot of like forced turnovers and things like that. And, you know, I guess my one tip of the hat to the weekend, 27-24, called it, and a defensive or special teams play decided the game.
Yeah, man, Notre Dame, heart of a champion, right? Heart of a champion. They played their asses off. We came into this game, we said both these teams are pretty evenly stacked, carbon copies of each team, good defense, running game, special teams, Jason said it, defense going to come down to it. Which quarterback wouldn't make the mistakes? Both made mistakes. Unfortunately for Penn State, they made the biggest mistake late in the game.
That was the costliest.
That ended up costing them. But I thought Penn State's game plan as far as an offensive attack running the ball was like fantastic. I mean, they rushed the ball for over 200 yards against Notre Dame. They did a lot of motions with the running backs, created lanes in the running game. They had all the momentum. They felt like they should have been up a lot more than 10-0 early.
Yeah.
And then Leonard gets hurt. Or gets, you know, evaluated for concussion.
When that
happened, the backup quarterback comes in, makes some nice throws, almost has a disastrous play that gets, you know, called back for an incomplete pass where they recovered the fumble. I forget what it was. They get that field goal there. And it felt like Notre Dame being down 10-3 was a win for them. They came out second half on fire.
Yep.
Immediately right down the field. Get a stop right down the field again, 17-10. I was with Jason. I'm like, oh, they got all the momentum. And then Penn State rallied back. Gets the touchdown. Then gets the interception. Then they get another touchdown. It's just like, man, does Notre Dame have enough offense left in them? Then the DB slips. Then the safety slips. They get the big play. And it just feels like this game's going back and forth, right? I throw a haymaker. You throw a haymaker. I'm wobbly. You're wobbly. Who's going to stand? At the end of the day, defense, special teams come through for Notre Dame. I felt like they'd be a little more detailed in the X's and O's and small execution. They were able to do that. Freeman has got this team playing well. Credit, man, credit. If I was James Franklin, I would have just ran it out, gone to overtime. And it's interesting because I was talking with some people who were watching the game. Notre Dame, obviously, they were down with about 4 minutes to go. Had they went down the field and got that touchdown with 10, 15 seconds, do you go for two there? Do you just go for the win? Do you try to win it right there, go for two? That would have been a decision that would have been interesting to make. Obviously, they got the touchdown about 3.5 minutes ago, kicked it off, got stopped, and then got the interception. But I'm happy for Notre Dame, man. I mean, me and Jason, we've been high on Notre Dame on this bottom side of the bracket all year. So I'm glad they're in the final, and it should be an interesting matchup as we get to hear Ryan Day and Lou Holtz go back and forth at it leading up to this game. That's what I'm looking forward to again.
Is the broadcast going to get them dueling at some point here?
You know, I'm sure Lou Holtz is going to come out of whatever cave he's hiding in right now and make an appearance, no doubt about it.
Yeah, hell of a game. Got a feel for Penn State, man. Their coach, he has like no wins against top five teams. One of the worst records against top five ranked teams in college football history.
What is he? 1-15, 1-16?
Something like that.
Now as an underdog against top five opponents. I mean, it's tough, man. It's tough if you're James Franklin because this was a good Penn State team. They put up a great fight.
They're good, dude. They're really good. They shot themselves.
This game could have went either way, man.
Most definitely.
But yeah, I mean, James Franklin, I mean, we talk about not being able to win the big game. You know, he's lost three games this year against Notre Dame, Oregon, and Ohio State. And two of these teams are now playing for the national title. That's tough.
Crazy. Any other comments on the game? We're good.
Good.
Next game. This is so funny. This is tough to watch. Ohio State won 28-14. If you're watching the game, you think like, oh man, Ohio State took care of business. It was close. And I did not like the play calling, which has been like my main criticism for Texas the last few games, even at the end of the season, going to the playoffs. But let's start there. Ohio State's defense came out strong, and they really swarmed the shit out of Texans. And then I think they go up, what's initially 7-0. Then Texas responds, has a big touchdown, tied up. And then Ohio State responds again. A little bit of different game plan. It was really exciting in the first half. And they kind of paused for a little bit, where you think this is going to be a slugfest. Ohio State goes in the half up 14-7. A big 75-yard touchdown reception by Henderson, which was the longest in playoff history. But this is the first. Are they considering like the BCS games like playoff history? Or is it just like now we're starting like a whole new record book?
Nah, probably the final four.
Final four.
The 14 playoff.
Yeah. Really exciting. I wasn't too bummed out. I was like, you know what? Texas playing, you know, fairly decent. We'll see how it goes. Ohio State looks really great. Yours had like this crazy circus toss right after the half where it looked like he was about to go down. Flings it up. It sets up a scoring pass touchdown on the next play from my boy Blue. Tied up 14-14. And we are early into the third quarter. Howard has a big run. It was huge, which sets up a touchdown by Jenkins. 21-14. Then this is where things get kind of weird, I guess. Texans go for it on fourth and goal. They had, I can't remember if it was like second and goal or third and goal, where they did a sweep, a toss to the left side, and Ohio State's guys are fast. They were blitzing the shit out of Texas, and that play looked like it had no chance of making it. He was already a few yards behind the line of scrimmage. I think it was second and goal, right? And then all of a sudden, next play, Ewers, he cannot move in the pocket. This guy's stiff, and I'm not sure if it's all the injuries. I could have sworn he was like a lot more fluid last year, but he gets hit, doesn't see his boy Jack Sawyer on Ohio State, hit him. It was like one of the cleanest strip sacks I've ever seen in my life, and he was quick, man. Touchdown, 28-14, 2 minutes left, and that kind of felt like the game. And that was it. They had a chance to tie it up, and all of a sudden it's a 7-point swing, and now they're down by two touchdowns. Ohio State, man, 4 wins over top 5 teams this year, which is really impressive. Really impressive. That Michigan loss, I feel like, really woke them up, and they're clicking at the right time of the year. They look unstoppable, and I believe they're heavy favorites going to the championship game. What were your guys' thoughts on this game?
Yeah, as much as I want to gloat that Ohio State won by the 2 scores I predicted, Rome, wasn't anywhere remotely what I said. Texas did make it a really tight game, and you were looking at, you know, 14-14 at that point in the third quarter, and then even, you know, they're going in to score potentially down 21.
They should have scored
right there, and it should have been a tied game. So it was really close. I think the biggest takeaway to the entire game, and where I would have been more wrong in the prediction, was, and kudos to Texas on this, you know, Jeremiah Smith was just a non-factor in this entire game. He had 1 catch for 3 yards, and his last 2 games basically had 2 touchdowns versus Tennessee, 2 touchdowns versus Oregon, and it felt like post-Michigan game, they were really finding something to get, you know, him involved that was basically just taking the top off of defenses and just being dynamic. And Texas, you know, they were not going to let him win in this game. And, you know, they got the ball to Tate, and, you know, you mentioned that big play to Henderson. So they were forcing other people to get the ball. And, you know, that was a great job by Texas defensively from a game plan standpoint, because he was the one who really ended it from an Oregon standpoint a week prior, that he was just going up and down against the Oregon defense. So it was a really great game. I mean, the final score is not indicative, as you said, of really where things were at. You know, huge turnover to end, just massive swing. You don't see many of those strip sacks for a touchdown going like 85 yards
laughing,
the other way.
I was laughing. I'm like, all right.
But I mean, it was, we wrote, Aaron and I gave a ton of crap to you for Texas, the entire team, as far as, you know, but hey, they were one of the best teams in the country. Being down to the Final Four, it's not a shock. They didn't play all the tough games that we thought they probably should have throughout the year, but, you know, they were every bit with Ohio State. But Ohio State, kind of as we talked through, like, they fixed what they went wrong versus Michigan, and they were going to be pretty much the top team in the tournament, and they look like it as they just dismantled Oregon, who was, you know, the consensus number one going in. If you're a Texas fan, Rome, like, you're stuck with Ewers. People are calling for Arch Manning all year. You know, was there a time that he should have been the quarterback? Was there going to be something better for this team offensively? Because it never seemed to take the offense to the next level, where you were supposed to be like, hey, this potential Heisman candidate.
He was, he was a favorite.
Yeah, and just offensively, I mean, you watch way more Texas than I did, but it never felt like this, hey, this is an offense that I'm going to be scared of every week. It felt like, you know, it was almost like Notre Dame, man. It's a labor to score points in a lot of this time, when the type of athletes you got on this team is like, why aren't they doing more?
Texas really reminded me of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ewers had like some really nice deep balls. Like, he's known for like a pretty fairly decent arm, and they have another quarterback who's really mobile, probably the most athletic Manning of the whole bunch, and they just didn't utilize him. They could have opened up the playbook a little bit more. One thing about Ohio State, Henderson, I think Judkins had a couple breakaway runs. He was quick as hell, really impressive. And yeah, you're right about Smith, man. They really kept them at bay, and Tate took a big chunk of the big time plays for them.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot of smack on Texas all year, but I've said it repeatedly. Texas is a top five talent team across the board. They can compete with anybody in college football. You know, offensively, Rome, you said it for the last month, 2 months, too many inconsistencies in the offense. They haven't put together four quarters of consistent offensive play, and they just have not looked good. And their defense, surprisingly, that's Texas's strength. They've got a really good defense. They showed up. They balled out. They took away Smith, did a lot of, you know, coverages you don't see in college a lot, where they had double teams, safety over the top, corners underneath, a lot of NFL-type coverages on just one guy. Like, you rarely ever see that in college where a team's like, dude, we're going to implement the Bill Belichick plan, pit two guys on them and just take them out of the game, and you guys can have the other half of the field and work that. So give Ohio State credit. You know, Will Howard tried to throw one pass in there under pressure. It got intercepted. They kind of went away from that. The running game for Ohio State was decent with Henderson and Judkins.
Yeah.
And then Tate had a really good game. But Ohio State has a lot of good wide receivers. You know, Tate, he's really good. He'll be an NFL wide receiver one day. The other, you know, Ibaka, and then...
Is that how you pronounce his name?
Ibaka? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
He has some nice catches.
He's a first-round NFL wide receiver. Obviously, Smith would probably be the number one wide receiver taken as an 18-year-old if he was coming out. So they have a lot of weapons. And defensively, man, Ohio State is really fast. You know, they don't get a lot of credit for that side of the ball because you think Chip Kelly, you think Ryan Day, you think of all the All-Americans they have on offense, that's their strength. You go back to that second and go out the one. They run the toss. They lose 7 yards.
Did you like that play when it happened?
No.
I was like, what the hell?
And I had a feeling they were going to run that play. And obviously Ohio State did too. And I was happy for it because...
Oh, yeah. You were like... You know, they loaded it really heavy on the left side. It had no chance.
And it had no chance. And, you know, I keep seeing a lot of people start talking. And then maybe they should have. Should they brought Arch Manning in to run like that quarterback power that they did earlier in the game on a 4th-and-1 and they converted to go down and get that touchdown to tie the game up in the second quarter? You know, my knock on Texas all year, Jason and I have said it, they got a cupcake schedule in the SEC. To me, they weren't mentally tough enough. And at the end of the day, that came back to haunt them. They just weren't in enough big games. Rome, you said it, Ohio State, 4 wins against top 5 competition. They're going to go for the record 5 if they can beat Notre Dame in the national championship game. No team in the modern era has beaten 5 teams in the top 5 in a single season. Ohio State has a chance to do that next Monday.
But
that was my knock on Texas. Like, you played one good team all year, and Georgia beat you. You got another one, and you went down again. And Texas, against average to below average teams, they look great. But against the elite of the elite, they just aren't there as a program yet.
I thought they still looked pretty good, man. They had a chance to win this. Yeah, so,
but
I don't know.
I'm glad they're out. I feel vindicated all year on my Texas take.
Eh, not really.
Our Texas take.
Yeah.
Here you go.
So how are you guys feeling about the championship game, Ohio State, Notre Dame?
We'll probably save some for later in the week as we do the previews. I said it going into the Final Four weekend as we went through. Ohio State was the best team of the four remaining. So, you know, I don't love saying that as a Notre Dame fan right now, because I mean, I think the spread is indicative of what everyone thinks right now.
It opened up at 9.5, right?
I believe it's down to eight now.
Okay. Yeah, I still think Ohio State's the best team in this point. A lot of things are going to have to go to Notre Dame's way. Where Notre Dame has excelled has been defensively in the secondary, but this is going to be the toughest matchup they've had from a wide receiver standpoint for them, you know, to keep up with. They're going to need turnovers in the game, and then Riley Leonard is going to have to be a lot more efficient to get the ball down the field without making the turnovers, because I think two turnovers against Ohio State's a loss for Notre Dame.
Oh, man, Ohio State against Texas, their ends, man, look so quick. They were so quick.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Whenever we later in the week break down the game, you know, Notre Dame's battling a ton of injuries. It's especially on that offensive line. Ron, we talked about that defensive front from Ohio State.
Dude.
One of the best in the country. Notre Dame's going to be out there already. What, left tackle? He's out. Another guy on that line is going to be out. Notre Dame feels like a fighter that's coming into this fight really, really banged up. And Ohio State just feels like they've been sparring with people and feels fresher to me. We'll see how it plays out. Marcus Freeman's done a great job, but Notre Dame has lost the last 2 years to this Ohio State team. Back in Columbus in 2022, and then last year when they had 10 guys on the field, then the Ohio State runs it in at the goal line to get that win. So this is the third time. They're very familiar with each other. Notre Dame plays an aggressive defense, like Jason mentioned. They play a lot of man-to-man coverage. Will they stick to that game plan and play Jeremiah Smith one-on-one, or will they implement a more Texas game plan with double coverage? That's going to be interesting to see how they do that, because Notre Dame likes to blitz a lot. Texas played real conservative, kept everything in front of them, a lot of zone blitzes, gave a lot of different looks, kind of confused Will Howard, similar to what Michigan did. It'd be interesting to see if Notre Dame's D-line can hold up. We just mentioned they gave up 200 yards rushing to Penn State. So there's a lot of intrigue coming in this matchup, and Riley Leonard, yeah, Jason said it best. If he doesn't turn the ball over, Notre Dame's going to have a good chance. If they lose a turnover battle, it's going to be real, real tough for them to stay in that game.
One thing I liked about Leonard's post-game, he really gave credit to his team because he had some costly mistakes. Maybe should have lost the game, but...
He made some huge runs, challenge. Too, yeah. Man. He made some huge runs to get some first downs.
Came back and fought.
18 carries for, 37 yards? But those are tough yards, and they needed every one of them.
Yeah. Intriguing, man. Freeman played ball at Ohio State. So, kind of fun. And last time Notre Dame was in the championship game, they got killed. So, they haven't done too well in bowl games. This year, they're doing great, man.
A different Notre Dame team than a decade plus ago.
That was
the end of the BCS era. You know, Notre Dame did probably have the toughest challenge. When you look at Aaron mentioned the offensive line, defensive line for Notre Dame, it's much different than it was. But yeah, Aaron brought up, I didn't even mention the game. Notre Dame lost two offensive linemen in that game versus Penn State. So they had two backup offensive linemen that were going throughout that game that just stepped up. Like, they got the heart. It's just whether that heart's going to match, you know, the talent on the field going against this Ohio State team is going to be the biggest question. You know, I have talked about Jeremiah Love in every preview, you know, only getting 11 carries in that last game, you know. Well, obviously the huge touchdown run, depending on his health and what he can be, like, how can we anchor him? Because at this point, Riley Leonard's kind of trying to do everything, and they're just slugging this offense, you know, down the field, like, as hard as possible, basically. Every yard is like, maximum effort and hard. There's no easy yards Notre Dame's getting offensively, and there's going to need to be some plays. I mean, they got kind of lucky with the slip down DB and stuff to get that one when they're going to need some plays like that in this game to get some easier yards.
Yeah, I agree. They're going to have to generate big plays. They're not going to be able to just put together 12, 13, 14 play drives against this defense. I think they can take a few things away from Texas if they can catch them in man-to-man. I'm not sure. I'm sure Jeremiah Love's pretty good coming out of the backfield because Texas really used Blue to match up against the linebackers from Ohio State, and they used that speed advantage to hit those wheel routes for two touchdowns. That was where they were hurting Ohio State, Texas, in the past games with the running backs. So that's something to look forward to. Leonard's a lot more mobile than Quinn, so that's something they have going forward. They're going to have to use him a lot in the running game, but agree with Jason. They've got to come away with big plays. And literally not just one or two. I think they need 5 or 6 20-plus yard plays in this game to really, really put a lot of pressure on Ohio State. And that's going to be tough against a Jim Knowles defense.
Yeah, excited to talk more about that. I just realized it's next Monday. Martin Luther King, right?
Weekend? That's right.
Yep. 3-day weekend?
Yeah. Yeah, love it.
Is that it?
I'm good.
I don't want to bring it up, but are we talking about coaches?
You want to talk about that Friday or Thursday or whatever?
Oh, coaches.
Probably be better Thursday because it'll be more in-depth names.
We can talk about, like, updated coaching rumors. Let's do that real quickly. Because,
well,
you know,
the only rumor we care about is the Bears. Let's just be honest. That's
before you go rumors, we have an official coaching hire, though, since the last pod we've recorded, too.
We did. Vrabel.
Jason's happy about that.
He's happy about that one. That's going to be a quick turnaround, man. I'd
be
nervous.
I did see, and I wanted to get Jason's take on it. I did see the Bears were going to ask for an interview with Marcus Freeman. Would you suggest he leave Notre Dame and go to the Bears if offered the job? Where would you rather him stay?
Just stay there.
Yeah.
The Bears just want to ruin the only team that's good that I root for. Just like, let's take the great coach away.
Took a little while, but McCarthy's out. That was announced today.
Interviewing with the Bears on Wednesday, by the way.
Yeah. Couldn't come to agreement
or something like that. Rome's front runner for the Bears position, Mike McCarthy, by the way.
It might be, actually. I kind of joked about it. Yeah, we joked about it like a few weeks back, but it's kind of lining up like that, right?
You aren't the only person. I saw some clips like Dan Orlovsky and a bunch of other like people saying that the Bears should be hiring him right now because they think they need the experienced coach. All I see is the offensive version of John Fox.
To be fair, man, he's won a lot of games with the Packers. It'll be like a good like F you back to the Packers, right? If he goes to the Bears and turn that thing around and kind of builds on that rivalry a little bit. Deal with the Dallas Cowboys even like down the stretch. They haven't had that kind of consistency in a while. It's just I think I heard someone had a take where McCarthy just wasn't empowered in Dallas and couldn't really do much else, right? It's Jerry Jones' world. And he'll do what he wants to do. Who they want to hire, though, who they want to interview, that's pretty interesting. Dallas is a weird job.
Well, like Dallas you said, Rome, it's Jerry's team. It's Jerry's world, so.
I would not take it.
I mean, I don't know how much longer Jerry's going to be around with us, but.
Yeah.
He's 82, yeah.
Starting to look like the guy from Tales from the Crypt, the old TV show from the 90s.
Hey, I don't think you guys watch the TV show. You guys don't watch Landman on Paramount Plus, right?
No, I got it.
I did see his cameo, though. That was
really good.
That was great.
It to Jerry, man. He's actor in opposite Billy Bob Thornton and John Hamm, and he held his own. He carried that scene,
yeah.
Man.
He deserves an award for that one. I did see that.
Yeah.
I'm going to start watching that show pretty soon, but I did see that cameo.
I need a show. I might start watching it. To be fair, he was pretty good at Entourage. Do you guys ever watch that show?
Yeah.
I hope so. Jason's a no?
I didn't watch Entourage, no.
Really?
No.
Wow. Jason, I'm surprised. He would like that one, I think. He feels like he'd like...
Why not, actually?
Like, he feels like he's like a turtle or somebody like that, right?
Jason, nah. I don't know.
No, I just... Let me sit on that. Got it, you know, just different HBO content for me. Sopranos, The Wire, you know.
Sopranos overrated.
Bad take.
It was okay. I think it was good for the time.
It started the era of prestige TV.
I think it was one of the shows. We'll have to do a pod on that one day.
Okay.
A breakdown. What do you guys think about the Raiders rumors with Tom Brady starting to take charge of the helm, calling up Belichick? Calling up Johnson.
What I want to know, and I'm not the only person to talk through this right now, the conflict of interest of...
It's a lot.
Of the Fox, you know, lead analyst on their main broadcast, who's also part owner of a team, who's in charge of coaching hires and stuff, basically influencing stuff. Like, do one of these jobs kind of get a give at a certain point? Like, is this Brady's, like, last year doing... this stuff on Fox, because there's already rumors like he's not allowed to like be in certain parts of facilities and things like that. And the
none
preparation
of that.
You
can't,
for these
you can't do any team meetings, interviews, nothing.
Pre-production meetings either. It's just live. He gets paid a lot.
He just shows up. He just shows up game day.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if Fox is just buying the star, I guess it is. But it's kind of like, I mean, Greg Olson was really good in that number one spot that they had previously.
It's great.
Now you got a guy like, hey, we're just going. I mean, I don't think Brady's been terrible this year. Like he's gotten better and fine on it, but yeah, it's interesting how much control he has over the organization. But does it turn into is it a Jordan like ownership thing that he turns into? You know, as far as these guys that are like the greatest at what they do, but don't know how from a management perspective. I mean, we saw Elway be somewhat successful in his Broncos run when he was kind of running the show as like team president or whatever. So you know, I think
Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Outside of that, he's terrible.
So it'll be interesting. I will say up until the Mike McCarthy
check the
news,
snake there, man.
Not well,
I
when,
don't think Elway was there when Elway.
Elway got rid of Tebow and got Manning.
Yeah. And then he drafted the...
Was it Cutler there with...
No. Cutler got traded by McDaniels as soon as he went to McDaniels took over that job.
Oh, that was a stupid
mistake.
Yeah,
Elway's downslide was when he took that quarterback out of Memphis.
That's
I can't remember
for the
his
Bears
name.
When Cutler was on the team. I really like that team.
Man, Smoking Jay was good, man. He was the best quarterback in Bears history until Caleb Williams.
Hey, but where's that take you gave Rome? Like, is Cutler still in jail? Or did he get out and the Bears won? Because remember you said, like, the Bears were, like, 0-10 with Cutler in jail for 66 days or something? Remember that? You sent some kind
jail?
Of message. You sent some kind of message out.
No, I think he got arrested or whatever, but it wasn't. I don't think he was in jail.
But
yeah,
the Bears
were
0-10, like, since his arrest, right? Or something like that?
Hey, the Bears are 1-0. The Bears are 1-0.
It was, okay. Yeah. They
Bears
broke that with the Pack win.
Yeah. They're 1-0 in 2025. The Packers are 0-2 in 2025. You know, it's a new year.
Cutler was really good in the league. I really like that show. That was a good show.
The league was a good show.
Yeah, it was not bad.
Not bad. That's it, huh?
But, yeah, going back to Brady and the Raiders, I don't know where the Raiders are going to go with that. I'll be honest with you. Like, up until the McCarthy news, like, I was concerned the Ben Johnson to the Raiders was going to get announced at a certain point because he probably would get, like,
it's
whatever.
Picking up steam, yeah.
Carte blanche authority he's looking for. I mean, there's a lot of random quote unquote insiders for the Bears, like talking about how good the meeting, the first interview was with the Bears on Saturday with Ben Johnson was. He's apparently pulls his front runner, but it's about convincing Kevin Warren is the rumors as far as Ben Johnson, you know, from a leadership and culture standpoint. It sounds like he passed well the first initial round, but I don't know. This McCarthy thing's got me shaking because these are all the things of like, you know, this is when the Bears rushed into hiring John Fox after he got, you know, fired from the Broncos.
Well, I don't like him at the Broncos anyways, but yeah, he should have never got that job. This just came out like an hour ago or so when I was waking up from my nap. Deion Sanders.
Yeah, to Dallas. I mean, I don't
Do
like
you think
it,
he
but...
takes an interview?
Oh, yeah, they've already talked.
Yeah.
Whether or not they've done an interview, but Mike McCarthy, I don't think he's going to get hired this round. I mean, usually, typically, coaches that get fired, they usually take a year off, kind of, you know, relax.
He was fired, but
I mean, basically, once you don't renew a guy's contract or extend a guy, you're basically, it's a nice way of saying we don't want you anymore.
They were talking and game planning for the new season. I think he walked away.
I think he wanted a long-term deal probably in the 4 to 5 years, and I think Jerry probably offered him a 2-year deal.
Yeah, I would have walked away, too.
That's my guess. You know, Ben Johnson, I still think he ends up in Jacksonville. That's where I ultimately think he ends up.
They think he's a no-go. He's not impressed because they won't get rid of Trent Baalke, apparently. They said that's not that big of steam at all.
So, we'll see. I mean, you mentioned last week that Trent Baalke would, you know, Khan would get rid of him if the right candidate came around. So, we'll see. Raiders, we'll see what happens there. I think Liam Cohen's going to get a job. Maybe he gets one in Jacksonville over the Raiders. His ties with Tampa, I think Brady really likes him.
I heard that.
He might bring him in. So they want an offensive guy there. If it's not Belichick or Vrabel, I know, you know, Brady reached out to both of those. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the Jets is the interesting one. No one's really talking about them. Maybe Rex Ryan ends up getting that gig. I think he is.
Dude,
I think Rex Ryan's going to get that job back.
Like, I didn't realize, because typically we have, like a lot of hirings already, but they changed all the rules with off-season interviews and things in between the playoff games as well. So it kind of threw everything off. So it's a little more of a gradual drag than we're used to from years past.
Well, yeah, the Bears are just, you know, interviewing 47 people for this position. So
it's too many interviews.
All the time in the world.
How'd the interview go with David Shaw, man? How'd that one go? They leaked that one?
No reports on the David Shaw that I heard of. I just heard a lot about Vrabel and Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn. Yeah,
the one I thought that was ridiculous, Vance Joseph for the Raiders, potentially.
Nah, Vance Joseph isn't going to get a job. I mean, if there's going to be a D coordinator to get a job, it's going to be Aaron Glenn. Someone's going to maybe go that route. Maybe the Saints. You know, yeah, maybe a lot of Spagnuolo, man. I mean, with the Chiefs, Spags, will he get a job?
He'll go to the Hall of Fame.
A lot of people
speak
high about him, man.
Yeah.
And obviously, he got a bad gig there of the Rams when he took over there. So,
how many years ago was that?
Shit, like 15 now?
Yeah, it was a while. That was pre-Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, he's a guy people speak highly of. So, we'll see. Nagy, I've never liked Nagy.
The Jets deserve Matt Nagy.
Maybe. Because I know they're talking to their whatever assistant GM with the Chiefs, too. So they might try to combo that up. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's cool. We'll see what happens. That's it. Sources from the Sofa. Peace.